afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Happy September 1, 2022. It is Thursday. Hi, Dave.
Oh, my. Can it really be September? Oh, yes. Hello, Melody. Happy National No Rhyme, No Reason Day. Great way to spend the 1st of September by recognizing words that don't rhyme with any other in the English language. Now, poets reason that avoiding these words that don't rhyme, that is, it helps keep their poetry consistent. However, the so-called refractory words only interrupt poems where rhyme and reason matter. Well, the less fickle poet takes on these challenging words, toss out the rhymes, say farewell to meter, be whimsical and playful. I mean, the Jabberwocky never stopped Lewis Carroll. So dilly-dally, they say, in a world of mishmash, and find a verse that fits the spirit of the day, like deliver an envelope full of words directly up the chimney. Tilt the accent one way and lilt it another until the word fits in fluttery ways. Hey, just for the record, here are some unrhymable or nearly unrhymable words in the English language. Orange, month, silver, spirit, chimney, purple, woman, ninth, and pint. And now, Melody, and ladies and gentlemen, you know.
Okay, that's fabulous. I'm so glad you decided to bring that to us, Dave.
My pleasure.
Yes, I bet you enjoyed putting that together.
It's September, after all.
It is. Happy September. And let's go ahead. It's not a happy September for gold today. And, of course, I'm just going to go right to the USDX today. We bopped over. I mean, we're almost at 110. Where's it going to go? It's 109.67, up almost a full point today.
Crazy.
I mean, it is crazy. The Treasury yields, they're popping, you know, and but it did tank. And, you know, that's what they needed to do in order to have some resemblance of lower pricing. That's what it's all about. They're manipulating these markets. So these are not strong fundamentals giving us a strong dollar in order to, you know, having a great economy and everything. It's the manipulation in order to bring in these stronger dollars. It's going to make prices lower. That's their whole agenda. But it's, again, it's just another illusion that they're creating. But they'll be able to win an election with it. And that is the bottom line. So, yeah, we got some pain. But all the fundamentals that we've talked about and that you've heard about for time and time and time again are all there. And to me, this craziness, it makes it even seem like it's more dire and more like it's closer to something nasty coming our way a little bit sooner than later. So with that strength in the dollar, you had gold down right now $16. It did break 1700. It's at 1696. Silver was down 22 cents at $17.87. Platinum was down 22 at 838. Palladium was down 88 at 2071. And again, I mentioned that the dollar was almost 110. Crude oil was down 3.25 at 86.30. The paper market today, after being down a couple hundred points, and, of course, we're going into a three-day weekend. This is what they always do. If there's down in the markets, I'll guarantee you could go back 30 years. And heading into every long weekend, you're going to have a positive stock market. An up day always happens. It's up 145 for the Dow at 31,656. So when everybody gets together, the family, and you sit down and you start chatting, you guys can pat the paper owners can pat themselves in the back and saying how great their stocks are doing. The S&P was up 11 at 3,966. The NASDAQ was the only one that didn't make it into the green territory. It was down 31, 11,785. Asia was all negative across the board. Hang Seng was down like 1.75. Nikkei was 1.5. Europe was all negative. Everyone was 1.50% higher. 10-year yield, 3.259, so 3.26. That was stronger. Natural gas was higher, though, today, up 0.5%, 9.175 for that. So, it was a tough day. It's been a tough week. It's been a tough month, August, for gold and silver. But again, this is just temporary pain. Nothing has changed. I mean, if anybody reads the headlines or listen to, you know, things that are going on out there, you'd have to be, I don't know, on what planet and to think that things are getting better. I think we saw Bitcoin dipping below 20,000 again. I'm not sure if it rebounded since, but it did dip again below 20,000. And I guess we're going to get the jobs report tomorrow, right, Dave? Or are they going to hold off for a week?
No, we'll get it tomorrow.
We'll get it tomorrow. So.
And by the way, under 20,000 at 19,989.
What's that?
Bitcoin.
Oh, what is it?
19,989.
Okay, so it is below 20. Depends on what they do with the jobs report tomorrow. Not sure what could happen. But, we did see job openings rise in July after 3 months of declines. So it's a sign that employers are still trying to find workers, even though we have a weakened economy. The increase that the government reported today will be a disappointment for the Fed officials who are seeking to cool hiring and the economy by raising short-term interest rates. 11.2 million open jobs were available on the last day of July. Almost two jobs on average for every unemployed person. They ought to get their keisters out there and start working. We've seen that they've tried to increase wages. But those costs are passed on to the consumers. So it's not a good place to be, Dave. Dave, are you there? Unmute.
No,
mutiny.
I'm here. I'm contemplating your words. It's, you know, the proverbial rock and a hard place dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people and a lot of companies and a lot of government agencies. This pandemic era economy is really wreaking havoc on how people view the world, view their pocketbooks. And I think the crux of it lies in volatility and uncertainty. There is so much of it and has been since March of 2020. I mean, depending how you view it, you can say, well, it's we always have it, and it's always here, there to a certain extent. But, in my lifetime, I just don't remember another period of time like those that we've lived through the last a couple of years. And with the Fed embarked on a sort of do or die campaign against high inflation that is almost certainly going to throw us into recession at some point. And parts of the economy have been in it and are entering it as we speak. This isn't going to get better anytime soon. And for the everyday investor, my wife, who is in that industry, and I were having a discussion the other day about this, and I was arguing to her, Melody, that the number of reforms in the investing world that affects all kinds of investors, but mainly geared toward everyday Americans who have their futures tied up in 401ks that are largely in the stock market, that is being utterly manipulated day in and day out. And we're along for the ride. And, unless you're a market timer, like the Fed appears to be in terms of, it's how it handles interest rates and quantitative easing, quantitative tightening. It's crazy times out there, Melody.
And, too, it's something that, folks don't really talk about, because everybody's always so focused on, the stock market and those numbers and so forth and whatnot. But people don't realize what goes on behind the scenes. I mean, it was just a couple of weeks ago, I was reading about the America's $7 trillion retirement crisis. Yeah, there is a retirement crisis out there. But who talks about it? These retirement funds, they're all underfunded, and they have been for years. And usually, but when you have a rising stock market, it loosens the degree of crisis. But now we don't have that. And, so this is a problem in the background. When everything goes right, when inflation is non-existent, well, it's there, but not recognized, when rates are low, and stocks, as I said, are doing okay. There was still a multi-trillion-dollar savings shortfall. And then you had the pandemic, and you got this, and you got that, you got inflation, you got the fastest rate hike cycle since the 80s, recessions. $7 trillion. Out of that, four of it's been, hit. It's an issue that's not going away, that people really don't realize how vulnerable they are to their future livelihoods and their standard of living. And one thing government has and the Fed can do is they create, and Wall Street, they create this illusion that it's only affecting certain people and this and that, and they're doing, it's only got to be, a few people that are affected and so forth. But that's not the case whatsoever. And it's easy to get caught up into their illusion. And, we got home prices in June. They were 18% higher. I thought we had talked about this before. Did I pull up the wrong?
Yes.
I did. Why don't you talk about the next thing that we're going to talk about?
Well, the Federal Reserve's tightening campaign enters a new phase today that, paired with rapid interest rate hikes that Melody mentioned, is going to be even harder for financial markets, whether the paper markets or even the precious metal markets, to predict. At the onset of the pandemic, the Fed injected a lot of stimulus into the economy at an unprecedented scale. And now it's going to step up the withdrawal of that support, part of their two-pronged approach at crushing inflation. With quantitative tightening entering full speed as of today, the question now is, will it cause things to break in the financial system. You recall that as the pandemic hit over 2 years ago, trillions of dollars worth of Fed stimulus, a.k.a. quantitative easing, helped ease financial and economic conditions, mainly for too-big-to-fail banks and other multinational corporations. And it swelled the Fed balance sheet by $5 trillion in 2 short years. Now it's just under $9 trillion. But as the Fed seeks to tighten its policy to bring down rising inflation and its effects, it began a drawdown of its balance sheet by modestly letting bond holdings roll off earlier this year. But starting today, QT enters a more aggressive phase. Fed says it plans to cut its massive bond holdings by close to $100 billion a month, $95 billion, in fact, twice as fast as it's been reducing since June. Are you there, Melody?
I am. And you know what? This is kind of like about a $1 trillion each year that's going to be sucked out of the financial system if they continue to raise these interest rates. And they're not going to. They're going to have to stop. But you know what? Like you said earlier in the program, they're between a rock and a hard place. There's nothing they can do. They can play all these silly little games and saying, oh, they're going to raise rates swiftly, or they're going to do this, and they're going to cut back $95 billion, you know, blah, 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 blah. They're between a rock and a hard place. They can extend it maybe a month, maybe a week, or whatever. But the rates get too high, they can't service the debt anymore. You have corporations that can't service their debt anymore. You got people who can't do their debts anymore. So you cut back on the rates, what's going to happen? You're going to have a greater inflation. Okay, so, I mean, that's where we're at. And then you have a government that continues just to hand out money, hand over fist. How's that going to help inflation? So while the Fed is trying to raise rates to stave off inflation or to help it, the government's in there handing it out. It's a joke. So if anybody thinks just because, you know, you get a couple of down days in the market, a couple of up days, and they whack gold and silver that things are going to be okay, and they're crazy, because it's not going to be okay. These are all symptoms of something that is so much bigger and powerful that nobody really has any control over. It really is too big. And, you know, it's so, yeah, I mean, we pay a lot of attention to the Fed's funds rate. But as you said, the balance sheet, you know, kind of operates on autopilot. Bill English, he's a professor at the Yale School of Management who once served at the head of the Fed's monetary. He says, I don't think that they know what the macroeconomic effects are of adjusting the balance sheet. But I do know what it is when we're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TheTimeRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home. Oh, mercy, mercy, all things and what they used to be last night. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and, of course, the blog. Are you going to do a blog tomorrow, Dave?
I am.
Are we going to do a newsletter next week?
Oh, it's a surprise.
Oh. Well, we will be working on a skeleton crew tomorrow in the morning, and then we are going to close early tomorrow, you know, unless some unforeseen, you know, if gold increases by $50, we'll be here, or, you know, something drastic goes on, we'll be here, or we'll be closed on Monday also. So Pastor Butch Paul will be doing the program tomorrow, and so it will be a live show, so make sure you tune in. You know, we talked about the jobs report, and I just want to do this real quick. The monthly employment report from the Bureau is supposed to come out tomorrow. Now, ADP comes out on Wednesdays. Do you want to do that, Dave?
What, the jobless claims?
Yes.
Sure. Initial filings for unemployment insurance fell to their lowest level last week since June. Another sign that the labor market is somehow staying resilient amid a slowing economy, although there are even mixed signals there. Claims totaled 232,000 for the week ending August 27th, decline of 5,000 from the previous week and the lowest since June 25th. Now, the 232 is about 23,000 or almost 10,000, excuse me, 10% less than the 245,000 that a consensus of economists had been looking for. Continuing claims increased 26,000 to 1.44 million over the previous week. Now, the numbers, again, come a day ahead of the closely watched non-farm payrolls report from the government. Wall Street is expecting that report to show another major improvement, or a lot of jobs added, over 300,000 to be exact. But it's almost like take this particular number with a grain of salt. It'll be adjusted the following month anyway. And August is notoriously volatile statistically, since for one thing, a lot of students return to school, and that hasn't all been factored in and what have you, Melody.
Well, you know, Dave, you're in a very light, happy mood today, so we're going to continue with your Levity is Golden. Now, I just want to tell folks we're going to get back and we're going to start talking about, the emergency in Mississippi's drinking water. That's a shame. And fast food workers and their pay wages and more threat to China, Russia, and Iran. So they're up and coming. But, Dave, I think you're in a happy mood today. And hey, I think it doesn't hurt to smile.
Indeed. Smile, everybody. It's no surprise that one of human beings' most powerful tools is, yes, our smiles. To improve our health, to develop and strengthen our relationships, and to just feel better. It's that simple. Research shows that Americans tend to smile more and wider than folks in other countries. And those megawatt grins of ours are actually good for our mental and physical health. Even if we didn't brush our teeth when we got up in the morning. Let me try to prove this to you right now. Bear with me, but do this.
We are, Dave.
I want everyone who's listening, including Melody, to open your mouth as wide as you can right
and
now.
And Todd, the producer.
And hold it. Open as wide as you can and hold it for a count of five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, now, close your eyes as tight as you can while holding your face, your teeth clenched tightly, and hold your face in a big smile. Keep your teeth tight together. That's key. Hold that pose for another 5 to 10 seconds. Remember to breathe, by the way. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, now relax. Did you feel the release of any endorphins? Are you smiling almost involuntarily? Even laughing, maybe? Well, I don't know how you made out in that, particularly if it's your first time, but do it a couple times a day, especially first thing in the morning and right before you lay down for bed, and you'll be sure to have a good day. I almost guarantee it. I've done this for years, by the way, especially right before we go live right here in Financial Survivor, and it puts me in a better mood. Scientists say the benefits of smiling include stress relief, pain relief, strengthened relationships with others. Studies have shown that smiling during running, for example, can make you more efficient and make the run feel more manageable. I mean, our smiles really do send cues to our brains that says we're okay. Interesting, one study even found that smiling during an injection, a shot, can lessen the perceived pain of the needle. So, hey, you know, when you smile, your body has a real physical response. Researchers at the University of Kansas found your heart rate slows, your stress starts to go away, even if you're not actually feeling smiley and touchy-feely. Basically, we fake it till we make it. Plus, we find other people more attractive when they smile. It's interesting. Here's one thing. Olga Kazan wrote in The Atlantic a couple of years ago, pointing to an online reader forum that asked, what's a dead giveaway that someone's American? One trait that came up over and over again, smiles, our big toothy grins. In fact, here's how a person from Finland put it, Melody. When a stranger on the street smiles at you, this is in Finland, you assume A, he's drunk, B, he's insane, or C, he's an American. Well, studies show, yes, how about that? I guess people in other countries must smile less. And smiling at work can make you appear more trustworthy and deepen bonds with your coworkers. So I highly recommend trying it the next time you're stuck in a traffic jam, now that those are back. Besides, with the country so divided these days, a smile just might avert a civil war. And that, Melody, is this week's Levity is Golden. Back to some real news.
Well, I don't think a smile is going to prevent that. But I really do believe when you smile, it does affect your health. And I'll tell you what, and I get in trouble sometimes because when I'm around someone that's ill or sick, I always try to crack jokes. And it doesn't go over very well sometimes, you know, because, I mean, whenever I'm that ill or something, I want people to crack jokes. I want to laugh. I want to smile because it does make you better. And it is healthy for you to smile and to be. So, yeah, I do get in trouble. Even though I'm called Nurse Ratchet, I always try to. I still try to.
Not you.
So, yes. You know, so if I'm cranky, make me smile. I want to be happy.
Hey, even when gold's down $16 in the day, you can smile because you know
it's a great buying opportunity.
Better the next. That's right.
Yep. Well, you know, speaking of, you know, difficult times is, you know, and you know, this is another sign of America's infrastructure that is just crumbling. We've saw it in Detroit. We see it in places in California. We see it all over this nation. And it's always just one city at a time that it gets our attention. But it should be at our attention all the time because it's our infrastructure that is crumbling because this country is too broke. It's too bankrupt from the federal government down to your local governments to have these things fixed. Plus, they got all these better pension plans and so forth they got to put their money into. And again, just downright lack of good management and so forth. So I'm not sure what Mississippi's problem is, but it's a severe problem with their infrastructure crumbling. And their water system has been affected by decades of deferred maintenance due to lack of funding and short staffing. And this is one of the areas that should have deferred maintenance. There's other areas you would think that would better, you know.
It's drinking water, for God's sake.
I know. And but the city's 150,000 residents, they've been boiling their drinking water for the past month because officials said it could cause gas and other digestive problems. Now, I mean, this is the capital city, Jackson, and this is the capital city. Mm. People stand in water, wait for lines. This is supposed to be America. And again, it's a sign of the decline. So now you tell me how everything is hunky-dory in this nation and that we have nothing to worry about. So it really is a sad story. And this is just one of many, Dave. Just one of many.
Yep. Yep. I mean, lifelong residents of Jackson say they've been living without access to consistent water for years. And even when there is pressure, they say they often have to boil it to drink and cook. It's nuts. Past 2 years alone, people, thousands of them, have lost pressure entirely. Cold snap last year left tens of thousands of people without running water after their pipes froze. Similar problems happened again this year, but on a smaller scale. It's crazy.
It really is crazy. And it's, you know, it happens in a lot of places. It's not just after a bad storm or something that it happens. So anyway, so hopefully they get that problem fixed.
Yeah,
soon.
Really.
But let's see. Where else do we want to go? Russia and China forces began war games today in Russia's Far East. Russia received an initial batch of drones from Iran to deploy on the battlefield in Ukraine. Again, these are just some of the latest examples of America's top geopolitical issues finding common cause, foes finding common cause. And a Chinese diplomat says it's only natural that countries facing sanctions and pressure from the U.S. would move closer together, and that's absolutely true. Relationships among these countries are defined not by deep bonds or shared values, but, you know, by specific interests and their dislike of the United States of America, not that just to challenge Washington, but America. You know, our values. And that's the issues. We have the Chinese government is now calling on D.C. to repeal its technology export curbs after chip designer NVIDIA said a new product might be delayed. Mm-hmm. And some work might be moved out of China. The latest controls add to mounting U.S.-Chinese tensions over technology. American officials say they need to limit the spread of technology that can be used to make weapons. And so NVIDIA is asking to export any product with performance equal to its A100 graphics processing chips or better to China, Hong Kong, and Russia. And so do you think it'll get done, Dave?
Huh. Oh, boy. I'm going to stay away from that. If it does get done, it won't be because they've asked for or demanded it. I mean, it could be a subject of negotiation when the two sides get together next for any kind of formal or informal talks. I'm not sure what that would be about, on whether it's on some of the tariffs or some of the continuing tensions in the South China Sea. But I don't know. I mean, we do know that our officials are increasingly worried about Chinese technology development as a strategic threat and as potential challenge to American industrial leadership. Microchips are a prime example. And we've already tightened controls and have lobbied our allies to limit Chinese access to the most advanced microchips and to start developing more of their own. So anyway, NVIDIA, I find this interesting, that NVIDIA said it may be required to transition certain of its operations out of China. So the company was asking the U.S. government for exemptions for its development and support activities.
Hmm. Well, I don't know if they got any later improvement today or not. I wasn't quite sure, but their stock fell 9% today. So
NVIDIA.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it fell 9%. So can't have that happen. But, you know, also what I found interesting, Amazon took off all U.S. solar rooftops offline last year after a flurry of fires and electrical explosions. You know, you don't hear much about when it's happening, only after the fact. And between 2020 and 2021, solar panels in their fulfillment centers caught fire. You know, this is an area that, you know, of course they have much more power on those rooftops than any home will ever have. But, I mean, they have those lithium and everything in there, and we know they cause fires and so forth. So dangerous. Be careful when what you buy and how you use it. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Ladies and gentlemen, no one will let you down that way. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of clients. This final segment, she's at 1-800-375-4188. Interesting story here, stoked by the largest surplus in state history. Missouri's Republican-led legislature devised a $500 million plan to send one-time tax refunds to millions of its households. But in a shock to some, Republican Governor Mike Parson vetoed it. But Parson's objection? He wanted a bigger and a longer-lasting tax cut. He said, now's the time for the largest income tax cut in our state's history. He said that as he urged his legislators to consider a $700 million permanent tax reduction. Now, upon its likely approval, Missouri will join at least 32 states that have already enacted some kind of tax cut or rebate this year. An astounding outpouring of billions of tax dollars back to the people. In Idaho, lawmakers are convening today to consider more tax breaks there, and Montana lawbreakers are also weighing a special session for tax relief. Flush with federal pandemic aid and their own surging tax revenues, states have cut income tax rates for individuals and businesses. They've also expanded tax deductions for families and retirees, reduced property taxes in some cases, waived sales taxes on groceries, and suspended motor fuel taxes to offset the price hikes. Many have also provided immediate tax relief in form of rebates. It's not just Republicans either. Democrats have joined the tax-cutting trend. After all, it is an election year. Yet divisions have emerged about how far everyone should go. While Democrats have generally favored targeted tax breaks and one-time rebates, some Republicans have pressed for permanent income tax reductions that could lower tax bills and state revenue for years. Some budget analysts warn that permanent tax cuts could strain states during a future recession, especially. They warned that GDP has already shrunk two straight quarters this year, meeting one definition of a recession. And Lewin, president and CEO of the nonprofit Missouri Budget Project, says, quote, quite simply, relying on the current surplus to fund permanent tax changes isn't fiscally responsible and will ultimately require cuts the state services. Well, for some states, their current surpluses are unlike anything they've previously seen. The 2022 fiscal year, which ended June 30th for most states, marked the second straight year of large growth in tax collections after economic shutdowns triggered declines earlier in the pandemic. Many states reported their largest ever surpluses, in fact, according to the National Association of State Budget Officers. Tim Vermeer, who's a senior state tax policy analyst at the Tax Foundation, a nonpartisan think tank, which has rarely seen a tax cut it didn't like, said this, quote, I don't think there's been a time in history where states are better equipped to ride out a potential recession a majority, if not all, of rainy day funds are in a real healthy position. Now, in all, income tax rates have passed in 13 states this year, already equaling last year's historic total. Republicans control the legislatures in all of those states except New York, where Democrats who wield power actually sped up the timetable for a tax cut that was previously enacted. And in Republican-led Arkansas, they were the most recent to take action during a special session there last month. A new law will speed up a gradual income tax reduction enacted last year and provide a one-time inflationary tax credit. Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson described the $500 million package as a transfer of wealth, but from the government to the taxpayer. That could not have come at a more important time. At least 15 states have approved one-time rebates from their surpluses, including 10 led by Democratic governors and legislatures, 4 by Republicans, and 1, Virginia, with split partisan control. Democratic-led California, which has an astounding $97 billion surplus, is sending rebates of between $200 and $1,050 to individuals earning less than $250,000 a year and households earning less than $500K. All 4 GOP-controlled states providing rebates, Georgia, Indiana, Idaho, and South Carolina, also made permanent income tax rate cuts. Though often popular, tax rebates do little to fight inflation in reality and may actually be counterproductive in some cases by enabling additional consumer spending on items in scarce supply, thus contributing to higher prices. Still, incredibly big surpluses in light of high inflation especially, or even make rebates a tempting option for politicians, especially during an election year. Take Georgia, where Governor Brian Kemp, a Republican facing re-election challenge from Democrat Stacey Abrams, has been among the most aggressive tax cutters. He signed legislation gradually reducing Georgia's income tax rate from 5.75% to 4.99%. Plus, he signed a measure providing a $1.1 billion tax rebate, up to $250 for individuals and $500 for couples. And he's proposing an additional $2 billion in income and property tax rebates. And after a law temporarily suspending the state's gas tax expired in May, Kemp extended a gas tax moratorium through the middle of this month. Across the country, in Colorado, legislative staff estimate it will cost $2.7 million there to carry out legislation expediting an income tax refund of $750 for individuals and $1,500 for couples. Constitutionally mandated refund of surplus revenue was originally due to be paid next year, but it's being distributed now, along with a letter from Democratic Governor Jared Polis, touting it as inflation relief. Polis, who also is up for re-election in November, has been a previous critic of the automatic refund provision. Not surprisingly, his Republican challenger Heidi Ginnall is accusing him of hypocrisy. Well, whatever you wish to call it, no one can argue that elections have a habit of incentivizing flip-flopping. Now, Republican Idaho Governor Brad Little has called the legislature there back for a special session to consider more tax breaks. He's proposing to use part of the state's projected $2 billion budget surplus for a $500 million income tax rebate this year. He also wants to cut more than $150 million annually by creating a flat 5.8% income tax rate starting next year. That comes after the state reduced the top tax rate in each of the last two. and Montana lawmakers are weighing whether to convene a special session later this month to provide tax breaks from its budget surplus. Their proposal calls for giving $1,000 rebates to homeowners who paid property taxes in the last 2 years, and also provide income tax rebates of $1,250 for individuals, $2,500 for couples. Montana's Republican House and Senate Majority Leader said in a joint statement that their rebates would offer help as soon as possible with expenses such as gas, groceries, school supplies, and so much more. But some lawmakers, interestingly, including term-limited GOP Rep. Frank Garner, have expressed reluctance. He said, "My first concern is if this proposal is driven by an imminent emergency or by those wanting to write checks to voters because their emergency is merely an imminent election." Yes, ladies and gentlemen, politics make strange bedfellows. And for some serious flip-flopping, gotta love it. Okay, totally different subject. For survivors outside of China, the UN's report on mass detentions and other rights abuses against Uyghurs and other mostly Muslim ethnic groups in Xinjiang, China, was really the culmination of years of advocacy. The long-delayed assessment released yesterday by the UN Human Rights Office in Geneva concluded that China has committed serious human rights violations under its anti-terrorism and anti-extremism policies. The report largely corroborates earlier reporting by researchers, activist groups, and the news media, while steering away from actual estimates and other findings that can't be definitively proven. Survivors say the significance of the assessment is the weight and authority of the UN. Though individual governments like the US, plus the parliaments of France and the UK, have criticized the crackdown in the past, those declarations were brushed aside by Beijing as political attacks by Western countries. Well, one Uyghur publisher in exile, who has dozens of relatives in prison in China, said, "This time, China can't avoid this accusation. It's a stain on the Communist Party." Well, of course, the Chinese government swiftly denounced the report, with Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin calling it a patchwork of false information that serves as a political tool for the U.S. and other Western countries. Beijing has spent years trying to control this narrative, vilifying people who've spoken against the crackdown while organizing tours and news conferences promoting its position. State media have interviewed Xinjiang residents who denounced accusations against the Chinese government as lies, though evidence shows that such statements are almost always scripted, if not coerced. Well, many camp survivors faced years of threats by Chinese police and attempts to silence them, leaving them with a stark choice: speak out or face the consequences, or stay quiet and protect their loved ones. Well, however this thing ends up, the Human Rights Office estimates that about 1 million or more people have been detained in the internment camps in Xinjiang. Okay, last today, another cautionary tale for crypto investors. Federal prosecutors have asked Binance, the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange, to provide extensive records about its anti-money laundering checks, along with communications involving its CEO and founder. The Justice Department's money laundering section asked Binance to voluntarily hand over messages from the CEO, Changpeng Zhao, and other executives on its detection of illegal transactions and how they recruit customers in the U.S. The December 2020 request was reportedly part of a Justice Department investigation into Binance's compliance with U.S. financial crime laws that remains ongoing. I mean, this requires crypto exchanges to register with the Treasury Department and comply with anti-money laundering requirements if they conduct substantial business in the U.S. The law designed to protect the U.S. financial system from illegal finance provides for jail terms of up to 10 years. In response to questions about the letter and this ongoing investigation, Binance said, quote, regulators across the globe are reaching out to every major crypto exchange to better understand our industry. This is a standard process for any regulated organization, and we work with agencies regularly to address any questions they may have. Well, the government's letter made 29 separate requests for documents produced since 2017. In covering the company's management, structure, finances, anti-money laundering, and sanctions compliance, and businesses here in the U.S. Binance was launched by Zhao, known as CZ, in Shanghai in 2017, and as of July this year, controlled over half the world's crypto trading markets, processing transactions over $2 trillion that month. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Again, Butch will be here tomorrow. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog. Thanks as always to our engineer Todd and to you for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. And smile, ladies and gentlemen. Bye-bye.